Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, January the 28th. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Quite a week for President Trump. Three big things that happened this week. I remember a week ago at this time with Bill, we were talking about the shutdown and what was going to happen. Well, we know what happened. Senator Schumer surrendered completely, and I think it was a breakdown on his side of the aisle when he lost a lot of conservative Democrats who said, no, they're not shutting down the government over DACA. Then you had some great news about the American economy. They just keep on piling up the news. And I'm not talking about the stock market, because I think that could be that could backfire. I mean, stock market. I'm talking about real economic news about jobs and bonuses and American companies expanding. All of that, I think, is fabulous news. And of course, Davos ending the week with that great speech at Davos, where he basically said, hey, America is open for business. And I thought he put on an amazing presentation selling the United States, something that was reminiscent of President Reagan when he went overseas. It was a bad week, I feel, for the Democrats who don't have a message. I thought Nancy Pelosi is going nuts. Schumer, of course, had the problem with the shutdown. The way they're talking about DACA, I think they're disconnected with even their own party. It's just Secretary Clinton goes out and makes an outrageous statement, B-I-T-C-H-E-S, which I thought was completely out of line. So a bad week for the Democrats, a good week for President Trump. I'm not saying by any means that it's over, but it's looking a lot better, for the Republicans in 2018. Let me say hello to our good friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Just fine this evening, Silvio. A wet night in New York, but a pretty warm one, so we're not exactly freezing.
Well, we have actually a very nice day over here. We may get some rain later, but today was actually lovely in the 50s and sunny, and cannot complain about days like this. I call it San Diego weather. Because that's what they always have, from what I hear, in San Diego. Bill, before we get going, just a quick things on this day in history. I just wanted to bring up 1973. On this day, I remember watching this with my father. On this day, President Nixon announced the ceasefire in Vietnam, and I went back and read a little bit about it in the last couple of days. It was not just the end of the war, but it was the return of the POWs. I thought it was a very upbeat moment when he made that speech. Who would have believed, of course, that, my goodness, what, 2.5 years later, the whole thing would collapse. And I feel bad for the veterans, if nothing else, Bill.
Well, I feel bad for them, too, because I think that they were betrayed. Who betrayed them is a good question. But, you know, we had that war pretty much won. And how do we know that?
Absolutely.
Our enemy said so in his own history of the war. The North Vietnamese wrote a history of the war. It was remarkably honest. It has been suppressed in the United States. Nobody took a hammer or anything, but it's completely ignored. I don't think it was reviewed by any of the major newspapers. And the reason I think is that it's just so embarrassing to them. Basically, they conceded that they had lost the war. They said they lost. They were defeated, and they sued for peace. And that wasn't the party line of the American press, and it wasn't the party line of the left in America, which is what the press pretty much follows. And we basically went to a program of Vietnamization, which many journalists today laugh at. They say it was a complete failure. It was a complete success. We signed a peace agreement to end the war. The enemy violated it immediately, invaded South Vietnam, and the South Vietnamese army defeated them again without the use of a single American soldier. And then we're told that the South Vietnamese wouldn't fight. They fought very well. What happened was all these things involving Watergate, a new Congress came in and cut off all aid to Vietnam, to the very people we had fought beside and who had helped us in Vietnam. This was the preening 1974 Democratic Congress that regarded itself as morally superior to everybody. And President Ford at the time called it an act of great dishonor, which it was. And that was it. They could not fight on. And the North Vietnamese came down not with people in black pajamas, which is what Jane Fonda told us.
That's
little
right.
Guerrilla, you know, little nationalists who were only interested in freeing their country from imperialism. There were armor and infantry divisions. You can look at the news film. And we had that humiliating withdrawal from Saigon. And then President Ford very graciously offered that people who were boat people in the water trying to get out of Vietnam who had helped us would be invited to come to this country. And the Democratic Party's reaction was they'll take American jobs. I mean, the behavior of the Democrats, we saw the new Democratic Party. This was now the party of George McGovern, the party of the left wing, the party of the radical leftists and the civil rights and feminist movements. And I think it's been downhill from there.
Yeah, well, it's a shame, really. I don't want to dwell too much on it because we got a lot of current events. But looking back at it now, President Nixon wrote a great book that I would recommend to anybody called No More Vietnams. It's really a great book. And I think that all we had to do was early on when the North started violating the truce or the ceasefire, all we had to do was put up a few B-52s and the whole thing would have ended because they didn't really have they had the willingness to fight, but I don't think they had the military then. And had we done some effective targeted B-52 raids, I think it would have ended. And who knows what would have happened, but I wouldn't be surprised if South and North Vietnam would exist today, very much like South Korea and North Korea do. But,
yes.
You know, that's the history of it. I just feel bad. I feel bad for the soldiers more than anything else. Whoever lost the war, you know, that's a political thing. But I feel bad for the soldiers. I, you know, met many of them when they came back. And somehow I've always felt that they were not allowed, or they won the war, but they were never allowed to win the peace. And that's a real tragedy, Bill.
It is a tragedy. And, you know, one of the most tragic things is it gave encouragement to those people who believe they could lie about things and get away with it. You know, there today, we saw recently a Ken Burns so-called documentary on the Vietnam War. But the reality of Vietnam is there are no human rights in Vietnam. They had a chance at something with the Americans. It was all lost, and we're told by the political left and by the college professors it was our fault, that we should never have been there in the first place. They never mention anything about human rights, and they think Jane Fonda was a very honorable person. She was not. And you know, I think that if the Vietnamese could speak honestly, they'd probably say, why didn't the Americans stay? You know, and help us. And the community that came to this country, we did admit a large number of Vietnamese, has become one of our most productive communities.
Absolutely. And that's one of the, I always felt that it was very much like the Cubans in the sense that they came here, they didn't dwell on things. They just got to work. And they've built amazing communities, like you say. And if you look at their kids, they're all doing tremendously in school. So they're an American success story because they took advantage of the American dream and they understood, you know, they weren't asking for special rights. They simply said, hey, thanks for the opportunity. And just like the Cubans, I think they've done rather well. The other big on this day in history, Bill, more recently, the Challenger, and that, of course, was a terrible disaster. And what really stands out to me that day was President Reagan's speech. You know, he knew that he was talking to a bunch of kids in the country who had seen this thing live on television, and their teacher, in some cases, the students in that lady's school who were watching this. And I thought he was phenomenal. I mean, that was not a political speech, but I thought it may have been one of the greatest speeches ever, Bill.
Well, it was certainly an important presidential address. And, it's very interesting that that was Reagan at his best. And Reagan was often at his best. He just had a way of dealing with the American people that was respectful and at the same time warm. It was the day he was supposed to deliver the State of the Union message. People wondered what he would do. And I remember on that day, because the Challenger disaster was a stunner. I mean, we had never had something like this happen in space. We did have a disaster on the ground in the space program in the 1960s, but not in space. And people, wonder what could he possibly say to the nation, and would he go ahead with the speech? And I happened to call my mother that day. My mother was an old New Deal Democrat. I mean, in back in the 30s and 40s, she and other members of the family had the picture of Roosevelt on the wall and everything like that. And I said, "What do you think he will do?" And my mother said, "He knows what to do." And that was the kind of comment that you can't buy in politics, that some people inspire that kind of confidence that in an emergency, in a crisis, he will do the best. And he will do it for the country. And that was the feeling people had toward President Reagan. Not everybody, of course, but the country generally had that feeling that this is a man who in the end would do the right thing. And she wasn't worried. He delivered the speech. It was written with Peggy Noonan, and it was a very warm speech. The line about touching the hand of God, I believe, came from Scripture, or certainly from a religious document. And it was just exactly right. It was exactly right.
Yes.
And there was nothing phony about it. They then held, by the way, one of the things we should note is that there was an inquiry into the Challenger disaster, and it has really to this day considered a model of what an inquiry should be. They had real scientists working on it. They had Richard Feynman, who was one of the great American physicists, Nobel laureate, and they came to conclusions that were harsh in terms of the way NASA ran its business, and the fact that the thing should probably not have been launched that day. And I think corrections were made. I don't know if what shape NASA is in today. I don't follow it every day. But that commission is the kind of commission we should use more often when there's a serious problem and you must have an absolutely accurate and credible conclusion.
Yes. I thought it was interesting, Bill, a couple of things about the speech. I didn't know that it was written by Peggy Noonan. I suspected that, but I didn't know for sure. But what amazes me is how quickly she put that together for him, because the accident happened around noon Central Time, or a little bit before noon. And I don't remember when he spoke, but it wasn't in the evening, I don't think. So she must have really put that together quite rapidly. I mean, that's quite a story. But it's interesting this morning, Bill, because we were having lunch, family lunch, and I mentioned about the Challenger, and one of my sons said, "Oh, you mean the one that blew up over Texas?" And I said, no, that was later. That was in 2003. But it's just interesting
Columbia,
different generations, of course, have different when you associate a tragedy. He wasn't even born in 86, of course, and 2003, he was I guess 13, and he remember being, we remember watching that in the home. But great tragedy, but great speech by President Reagan. Before we get to the week of Trump and the Democrats and so on, Bill, you have a post. Why don't we begin with that? You have a very interesting post that you put up here in the last couple of hours about Victoria Tansing, who is, I believe that's how you say it, she's one of the attorneys in Washington who has been looking at this investigation, Mueller investigation. I thought maybe you could share that with us, Bill, before we take a break.
It was one of the best pieces I've read recently, as I noted at Urgent Agenda. Victoria Tansing is a very experienced lawyer dealing with government issues. Her husband, Joshua DeGenova, also very experienced. She used to be a federal lawyer. I see them on television a great deal. And she wrote the most magnificent piece at Fox today, explaining the dangers of the special counsel, of Robert Mueller, and really raising very thoughtful and credible questions as to what is really being investigated here. Now, Alan Dershowitz, another very distinguished legal authority, has raised the same questions, perhaps asked differently, warning about what he called the criminalization of politics, where somebody does something political and someone else turns it into a crime. And I think that Gregoria Tunsing was warning basically about the same thing. Are we reaching the point where by the use of some quick language and trick language and gimmicky techniques by prosecutors, we can turn a perfectly proper presidential decision and act,
mm-hmm.
fully justified by the Constitution or permitted by the Constitution, into a crime? And she went back over other special prosecutors, special counsels, and how, in her view, they did things like that. They pulled tricks on people. They took things and stretched them. And it is an especially important point because we elect our president in this country. And once elected, the president has got to be allowed to do his job. Now, if
mm-hmm.
there was something profound involved here, some obvious case, we do have provision, and Mueller is that provision, to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
But this is going on and on and on and on, and the president is trying to do his job. Now, Mr. Toobin of CNN, who is their legal analyst, which means he uses the law to follow the party line at CNN, has already announced that Trump is guilty of obstruction of justice. It's always nice to have an announcement like that made before the investigation is complete, but that is the way CNN operates. He did that actually in an article for The New Yorker. But Tunsing is warning about this, saying that, there really is no evidence of anything here. And she made
mm-hmm.
the observation that collusion, which is what the president was charged with originally, collusion with Russia, is not a crime.
Right.
And she's saying, where is the crime here? You know, the it is obvious the Democratic Party and its supporters in the press are trying to move toward impeachment. But impeachment requires high crimes and misdemeanors. And you kind of wonder what they're going to use if they, but Mueller, using the powers of the special counsel, can provide them with something. Even if it's a vague case, he can provide them with something that can get them to impeachment if the Democrats win the House in November, which is one of the reasons why this election is so important.
That's right. No, I agree with what she's saying. I think that's why I hate the independent counsel. And now they're talking about naming a new one, and I'm saying, no, just let the Congress figure it out. I mean, let the Congress investigate these things. At least when the Congress is doing it, we get to see the hearings, if nothing else. And at least the people doing the investigation have to worry about getting reelected, or at least are accountable to somebody. With the independent counsel, you have this office of people who are basically talking to each other. And then what complicates this one even more are these all this texting going on between people. It's just a mess. My fear with Mueller is whatever he presents, if he comes out and says nothing happened, the Democrats are going to be jumping from the top of the Empire State Building because I don't know what else they're going to do. But if he comes out and comes up with some kind of an accusation against Trump, it isn't a clear cut case. A smoking gun or whatever, then I think politically it's going to be very difficult. So I think it's a mess no matter what happens, Bill. So
yes.
if I was talking to Mueller directly, I would end this thing and say, there's nothing here. Let the politicians figure it out. Let the public figure it out. If you want to impeach the guy, well, have an election and figure that out. But I just don't think he should be a part of it, Bill.
Well, I agree. And also, you're dealing with a situation now where apparently Mueller is going well beyond the original understanding of what his appointment meant, and he's now investigating obstruction of justice in connection with the firing of his friend, James Comey, the director of the FBI. And Mueller
Right.
had been his predecessor. I mean, it may not be a complete conflict of interest, but boy, it certainly looks funny. It really does. And we're talking about the
right.
presidency here.
I know. It's great. And then on top of that, it makes it difficult for the president to do his job because he's got to be worried about, who am I talking to? And, are they going to talk to Mueller? I think it's just a terrible thing. And it needs to be shut down. And I'd rather have Congress investigate these things. That's what their job is anyway, Bill. I mean, that's how Watergate was investigated by Congress. As I recall, Iran-Contra was investigated by Congress too, wasn't it? So
yes.
I don't think that that we need to be doing these things. Let me take a little break, Bill. When we come back, we'll get into the week of Donald Trump, which was a, as I said in the introduction, a rather remarkable week. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos Geddes, who's going to tell you about what he's doing this week.
This is Carlos Geddes, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
You know, we have the great honor of playing Carlos' music, and of course we promote his career as well. He's just a great guy. He's from Venezuela. He and his wife are good friends. They've become very active, and of course, the fight for freedom in Venezuela. So we tend to have this, aside from the interest in the music and the radio show and all of that, we have this great interest together in what's happening in our native country. So he's just a great guy. And if you want to know where he's at just about every day of the week, on Facebook, he has a public page. And you can check on that and find out what's going on. Let's get back to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I still think this is an amazing week for Donald Trump. I give it a plus overall. I think he did well at Davos. I thought it was a good speech. The economy just continues to do well. But let's begin where we left off a week ago, Bill. When we were talking about the shutdown, we didn't know how it would turn out. But we know now. Senator Schumer didn't come out very well, Bill.
No, he didn't. And, you know, there's something very interesting about this case. Well, about many cases. But you mentioned the name Chuck Schumer. And he's not coming out well at all. He is being forced to the left by his party, which has become a real nutbag party. And he, of course, by being forced to the left, cannot get things through. And he fails. But every failure must bring smiles to the political left of the Democratic Party, which wants people like Schumer out. Schumer is the old guard. Schumer is the traditional Democratic Party. More to the left than I'd like him, but within the mainstream of liberalism, as is Steny Hoyer, the Democratic whip in the House of Representatives. And I think that, in a way, Schumer is being set up now to be replaced. And they will want to replace him with the most left-wing member of the Senate. And I don't know if that's going to happen because the Senate has to elect the leader. And I don't think there are enough insane Democratic senators to elect a crazy person like Bernie Sanders. But I think they want Schumer out. Their claim, of course, is that Schumer didn't go far enough to the left.
I mean, what were they expecting him to do, Bill? He doesn't. I mean, the Friday night that the government shut down, he didn't have six of his senators with him. Alabama, West Virginia, Missouri, Indiana, North Dakota, and Montana simply said, "We're not going to do this over DACA."
Those are red states.
That's right. The real political reasons here. They're not going to do it. And I thought, in the case of Doug Jones, it was very interesting because that was his first. His first entry really into the politics of things. Now, Doug Jones said that he was doing it because of CHIP, you know, the health care. But I'm sure DACA had a lot to do with it. And I don't mind, as I've said before, I think you can do something, you can offer something to these dreamers. I'm not opposed to that. What the Democrats wanted to do they basically want amnesty for these dreamers. And that's never going to happen, Bill. So they're very unrealistic. I don't know where they think they're going with this, but politically, I think Trump is winning this debate, Bill.
Well, you know, I was going to say that I think that Trump has the country behind him. And if Trump wanted to do something very smart-alecky, and typically Trump, he ought to get up during the State of the Union message and say, we have a disagreement on immigration policy. So why don't we have a national referendum? He would win that national referendum in 1 minute. Because the country is strongly behind his views on it. Now, he's offering something to DACA, and I think we should do something for these kids. I mean, they didn't come here illegally. Their parents did. And
that's right.
We should give them a – but what they want to do is attach to DACA – this is the Democrats – is this chain migration business. Well, since they're here and we're going to legalize them, how about all their aunts and uncles, you know?
That's
and,
right.
And grandma and grandpa and, oh, there's a cousin who lives down the road.
That's right.
And that is just unfair to the people who come here legally. That is, I think, an outrage. But the Democrats are saying without that, they're not going to go along with it. And I think you're absolutely right. I think the more the Democrats prolong these crises on immigration issues, the more they lose. And also, we're getting in, and it's a very important point, in the next week to the time period when the tax reform legislation cuts in,
mm-hmm.
and people will start to see the results in their paychecks. And that no matter how CNN tries to avoid it, and they will try to avoid it, and so will the New York Times. The New York Times will probably put the tax benefits on page 83, you know, under an ad for a socialist organization. But no matter how much they try to avoid it, people will see this in their own homes, and that's what they're going to want to talk about.
That's right, and that's the thing with the economy. The economy is not that difficult to understand. If it's going well, people feel it. If it's not going well, people feel that too. So the economy, that's, you know, it's one of the things that it's very easy to understand, and nothing is easier to understand than a paycheck. But I thought when President Trump came out with the offer of the 1.8 million, many people on our side said, well, that's amnesty. And I was a little confused when he came out. But then I sat back and I said, it's actually brilliant. Because he's saying, I will go beyond the 800,000 that you want me to legalize, but here's what I want in return. So it seems like he's put the ball right on the laps of the Democrats, and let's see what they do. Now, I continue to say, Bill, that I don't think they're interested in any solution. I think they just want the marches. But I'm not sure that may be what they want. I'm not sure that's going to be very helpful for any Democrat running in a competitive district. So that, you know, that's all I can say. It may be what they want to do, but I think that train left the station, as they said. The politics of this is with Trump, not with them right now, Bill.
I think that is absolutely correct. And, you know, let's see what happens in the next week or two, because remember, there is another government shutdown due if they don't come to some conclusion. And I believe that's February 8th, and we can go through all this crisis again. And the American people will get tired of it. They really will. I think also that you saw in the last week the damaging effects of the corruption in the press. When the president announced, he did not formally announce it, he indicated
mm-hmm.
this enormous infrastructure program that he has planned, which is wonderful. It will rebuild the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It will make it a much more competitive country. And it will also provide hundreds of thousands of jobs. It was barely noticed in the press. Unbelievable. The level of news reporting, it makes me angrier and angrier every day.
Well, that's exactly right. Now, the only good news, I guess, out of all of this, I was listening to a fellow the other day, Joe Concha, is that his name? C-O-N-C-H?
Yes, Joe Concha.
Yeah, right. He's,
yeah.
I guess, a media person at
yes.
one of the many places.
For the Hill.
For the Hill, and he was saying something, you know, this caught me by surprise. This is what he said, that CNN is having a hard time getting 800,000 people to watch their network,
that's
meaning
right.
their average or whatever it is. So, it may be anti-Trump, but it's not getting an audience. So I don't know how far that can go, because at the end of the day, these people are in business. I mean, they may be anti-Trump, but they got to pay their bills. And so at some point, you know, they may still survive, but their rate card drops a great deal. It's all based on ratings, right?
Oh, sure.
And if Sean Hannity is getting 3.9 million people watching his show and they're getting 800,000, well, I'm not saying they're going to go off the air, but they're not going to be able to charge as much as Sean Hannity. I guess that's my point, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And, of course, the people who Time Warner, which runs CNN, is obviously looking at this. And there have been stories recently of CNN being sold to another company, and they would obviously look at this. And I don't think that Jeff Zucker, who runs CNN, is very long for that job. CNN. I don't think he's very long for that job. I think there's a lot of dissatisfaction, certainly with the numbers he's producing, which are not high at all, and also with the fact that he has ruined the CNN brand by simply turning it into an anti-Trump network. And I think that there is talk of him wanting the job at CNN, wanting to be head of, not CNN, but ESPN. I don't know if he has any chance of getting it. I'm not crying for him. He has millions of dollars, which he's earned or dis-earned or non-earned over the years. But I think that if CNN is to be saved in any way as a news organization, there has to be a major change at the top. There may also have to be changes down below, because I think that the integrity of CNN has been so badly damaged by Zucker in making it into the anti-Trump network that it's going to take a long time to rebuild.
Yeah. You know, Bill, I remember a time when, not that long ago, where CNN was actually, they used to call it the boring network because they were so right down the middle, you know. And I thought that was pretty good, actually, to have a boring network. It's not a bad idea if they're just going to focus on news. But somewhere along the line, and I don't know when it happened, but somewhere along the line, they decided to compete with MSNBC, and that was a big mistake. Big mistake.
Big mistake. Oh, yes. And what's interesting there is that CNN, actually CNN always called itself the first name in news, the place you turn to, and you know, all that other stuff. There was always a left-wing tilt to it. But they did try on their news broadcast, as opposed to commentary broadcast, to be reasonably neutral. Today, they not only are not neutral, they don't report much news. There are actually not many news stories on CNN. I call it the first name in views. And they talk about their 24-hour news cycle. It's really a 24-hour talk show. It's mostly talk. There is very little news being reported, and what is being reported is so obviously meant to tilt the news against the president that, I remember one of the reporters last week excitedly got on the air when the special counsel story came that Mueller was going to talk to Trump. And she said, oh, she was so breathless. I mean, I thought I was ready to call 911 for her and say, you know, bring the oxygen. She said, this is not going toward the president. This is careening toward the president. And I just have this image of my mind of Robert Mueller careening, you know, rolling over and over toward the White House, breaking through the White House walls while careening and finally getting to the Oval Office and saying, I've got you. I mean, the language used is so crazy. And the way in which they alienate any viewer who is not completely in their corner. CNN is basically today a ruined operation. Mm-hmm. It is possible someone can come in and fix it. And that someone has got to be someone of impeccable integrity and news ability. And there aren't too many of those guys left.
Right. I thought it was interesting that, you know, Professor Dershowitz could probably work for whoever he wants. I mean, I don't think, you know, Professor Alan Dershowitz, is that his name? Yeah.
Yes.
He could work in whatever network he wants. I mean, any network would love to have him. And the fact that he's with Fox, I think, tells me that he must have, I'm sure he must have been offers by the, given offers by the others. And the fact that he chose Fox, I think, speaks not necessarily about Fox, but it probably speaks about the others, that he decided to go with Fox News rather than CNN. MSNBC.
He's sometimes on CNN,
but
less and less. And I have a feeling that that CNN, I think that any good network would want him because he's very, very
sure.
good.
But
oh,
he's great.
Think that there are probably plenty of people at CNN who don't want him because he won't follow the party line.
That's right, or at least he won't tell them what they want to hear, which is what. What they just want lawyers who support whatever they're saying. The other big story of the week for the president, I mentioned the economy doing better and better all the time, but the speech at Davos, I thought that was great. And there again, the media was really silly. You know, they were all basically persuading us that nobody was going to greet the president and he was going to be, you know, booed and all of that. Turns out that they liked him. He did, and he gave a great speech, Bill. I mean, he's not Reagan, obviously, when he speaks. Nobody is. But, he gave a great speech. And the idea that America is open for business, I mean, what could be greater than that? How can anybody in their right mind disagree with that message, Bill?
Well, there are people who think they're in their right mind, you know, and who disagree with it. But he did do an excellent job. And yet when you go to the news media, and again, we'll bring up CNN, all they wanted to say was, well, the president spoke to the delegates at DACA today, but Davos today, but it must have been in his mind that waiting at home was Robert Mueller, waiting to question. I mean, they always came back to that same subject. So it tended to be minimized in the minds of viewers. But it's interesting that presidents can develop a way of speaking above the press. Reagan did it. And he did it very, very well. And he was able to communicate directly with the American people. Now, Trump does it through tweets, which may not always be the best idea, but he's also now beginning to do it in other ways. I think he's gotten very comfortable with the office. I think he's conducting himself well. And even though the press will look for a scandal a day, I think some of those scandals may have backfired. I think the attempt to smear Melania Trump last week backfired.
Oh, man. Oh, that was awful. Oh, that was awful, Bill. What they tried to do to Mrs. Trump. I mean,
yes.
When you go that low, I mean, that's pretty bad. I mean, look, I was as critical of President Obama as anybody, but I never said a word about Mrs. Obama. I always felt that she was entitled to her privacy and her zone. Now, I did criticize her when she said that during the campaign about not being proud of her country and all
yes.
of that. I couldn't believe that. I mean, oh, you were not proud of your country when we landed at the moon? I mean,
yeah.
Come on. I mean, you know. But I basically never – I didn't touch her at all because I didn't think it was fair, and certainly not the kids. But what was the point of bringing up this stuff about Melania Trump? I don't get this, Bill. I mean, what do these people do, sit around and say, what can we write today that is nasty about Trump? I mean, it's crazy, Bill.
Well, what they want to see is they want to see – this is. I mean, I have a feeling that some of these journalists sit around and have dreams. They make in their own minds their own "I have a dream" speech. I have a dream that someday the First Lady will leave the White House in disgust and divorce Donald Trump. Oh yes, I have a dream today, and that's their idea of a dream. And they want it. I mean, you can be sure at CNN they cannot wait for Trump to be impeached. I mean, I can just see Jeff Zucker, you know, probably by that time working somewhere else, saying, "I have never been prouder of journalism. We have saved the nation. We have saved the world. We may have even saved the universe." And, I mean, this is the way they think. I remember after Watergate, all the heart-to-heart discussions, people, how close we came to losing our Constitution. Oh, please. The Constitution was never in jeopardy. And these guys were getting on TV even then. And then we really just had three networks. It was before the age of cable. And saying, "This is the worst constitutional crisis in American history." And I think it was John McLaughlin who said, "Worse than the Civil War?" I mean, you know,
right.
It was a $2 burglary that Nixon handled in the worst possible way and basically forced himself out of office. But what usually happens in these circumstances is when you chip away all the phoniness, the garbage, the propaganda, what you usually have is an attempt to bring down one man because they don't like that one man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Watergate, Richard Nixon wasn't driven from office by Watergate. He was driven from office because he was Richard Nixon. Watergate was simply the excuse. And the fact is people just didn't like him. Even members of his own party didn't like him. And that is the same thing right now. They don't like Trump, and they want to drive him from office. If Jack Kennedy had done what Richard Nixon had done, it would have been on page 46 of the Washington Post, in a little box under personals. You know, I mean, it wouldn't have been covered at all. But it was Tricky Dick, and they, you know, they were so appalled, the press was, that he not only was elected president, but he was elected president twice, and he carried 49 states against George McGovern. Who many Democrats thought was so magnificent that he was at the Last Supper. I mean, you know, and they couldn't believe that that was the Pauline Kael moment. Pauline Kael was a very famous film critic. And after Nixon won 49 states, she said to her friends, became a famous quote, I don't know how he could have won. I don't know anybody who voted for him. Well, of course, that was that exactly what you saw in 2016 with people not knowing what was going on in their own country.
Right. No, I think you're right. I think they're unbelievably out of touch at CNN, and I don't know what's going to happen. We'll take a break in a minute here, but I don't know what's going to happen if Mr. Mueller comes out and just says, "Well, nothing is going on here. I didn't really see anything." I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. I was listening to that fellow from South Carolina who's really good, representative. I can't think of his name right now, but he's really good when he's on TV. He's in the Judiciary Committee, the guy who used to be a prosecutor.
Craig Gowdy.
Gowdy, that's it, Gowdy. He was on the Morning Fox show, and he was saying that he has a lot of confidence in Mr. Mueller. You know, he says, you know, let the guy do his job. But I'm, you know, when I hear Gowdy say something like that, I'm beginning to think that, you know, maybe Mueller is going to be okay when he issues a report. And then what are these Democrats going to do? I mean, what are they going to do if he comes out and says, it's okay, nothing, you know, I couldn't find anything. But if you guys in the political field want to do something about this, you know, go ahead and run against him. I mean, you know, or something like that, Bill. I mean, I don't know what these Democrats are going to do. They're so invested in this thing. They're like the guy who said, I wrote you a check and put it in the mail. And they're hoping the check never arrives because they don't have any funds to cover the check, Bill.
That's exactly right. Well, look, I mean, it's
maybe a long-winded analogy, but you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, look, you have a situation in Washington now where it's even more of a fantasy land than it usually is. Now, it's always been to a certain degree a fantasy land. But I remember back during the Vietnam War days when I was on the New York Times, riding up in the elevator to the 14th floor where I worked with James Reston, a very famous journalist. And I asked him, Mr. Reston, what is the atmosphere in Washington? Well, it's very poisonous. It's really it's more poisonous than I've ever seen it. And this repeats itself every generation. You go through a period like this. And every generation thinks it is the last generation in American history because we're about to have a civil war. But the fact of the matter is, what is going on in Washington today is much more typical than untypical. We go through these things all the time, but we have not had in the past the tremendous power of cable television, of the personal networks, the social networks, of the fact that people can just go to their iPhone or iPad and get the news, the fact that they can watch any number of networks and listen to any number of stations. It is the presence of media to a degree that we've never experienced before, and the fact that the basic standards of journalism have collapsed.
That's right. And I think that is the big story, that there just doesn't seem to be any standards whatsoever. I mean, I think, back in the Vietnam days, there were probably a lot more serious people doing the business or covering the news. I'm not saying that they were not liberal. They were liberal. But I just think that they were more serious than some of the people that you were watching at the moment. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend Bill. We want to talk about the Democrats, who I think are having a bit of a crisis, I think. We always say that, but I think this time it's really very real. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Virgin Agenda. We've been talking about the week that President Trump had, a very good week, actually, for President Trump. We're seeing some interesting polling data regarding what they call the generic vote that seems to be, coming a little bit more favorably to the Republicans. It's not the 15 points or whatever it was. It's now more like 5 or 6. I was watching Scott Rasmussen this morning, who I guess he still does polling. He was analyzing, and he says if the election were held today, the Republicans would hold on the House. Not by much, but they would hold on to the House. Let me get back to Bill. Bill, I think this was an awful week for the Democrats for a lot of reasons that we'll get into. There's no message. Pelosi is out of control. Poor Schumer, right, to be in his shoes. And then to top it off, the former First Lady, former Secretary of State, decided to use words that, we don't usually associate with former secretaries of state, Bill, at least not publicly.
Well, that's very, very true. And the Democratic Party is in terrible shape. But, you know, this is the frustration, Silvio. The only way the public can know that the Democratic Party is in terrible shape is if the press reports it. And the press is on their side. The press has become a division of the Democratic Party. I mean, all you have to do is look at the leadership of the party. Their vice chairman is Keith Ellison, who is a devotee of Fidel Castro. He once said we want the Castro regime to survive because they are protecting some good people, and the people he was referring to were people like Joan Chesimard, an American cop killer who had sought asylum in Cuba. This is also a man who was at one time a leading figure in the Nation of Islam, which is a hate group. And he is the vice chairman of the Democratic Party, and many people wanted to make him chairman. It is a
right.
party out of control. We've always had fringes in political parties, but we've never had a fringe take over a political party the way the left-wing fringe is taking over the party today. You have at the top man, Tom Perez, who literally ran as the establishment candidate when he ran for chairman. This is a man who uses foul language in speeches where children are present. I mean, and they're complaining about Trump. And basically the moderates in the party, and there are a number of them from the red states of the Midwest, and of the North Central area, they are really without a home. And Joe Manchin has now announced that he will run again for election to the Senate from West Virginia as a Democrat, is a moderate Democrat. Some people thought he might jump parties. He's decided to stay with his party, but he is really taking them on and saying, you just can't do this to us. Just go further and further to the left. And he told Nancy Pelosi today to grow up, which I thought was something one usually doesn't say to Nancy Pelosi.
When she's in her 70s, you would expect a woman of that age and seniority to be more serious. But for her to say what she said, Bill, about Trump wants to make the country white again, I mean, what kind of a thing is that to say, Bill?
It's a ridiculous thing to say. That's the new McCarthyism. If you don't agree with her, you're a racist. And that's exactly what we had back in the early 1950s. And it's going to get worse because they're going to have these obnoxious Academy Awards where all these little preeners are going to get up, having studied American politics for 10 seconds, probably in a comic book, and they're going to announce their political views. I also see that after the State of the Union, there's going to be a reply called the People's State of the Union, which will be given by people who probably have between $20 and $40 million in the bank. And Michael Moore will be there to add his, and Whoopi Goldberg, who must by this time be 106, and some of the others, and they will give the reply called the People's State of the Union. Which people are they talking about?
I don't know. Maxine Waters is also going to do one.
She's
at the Black Entertainment Network, I think.
Yes.
Is that what it's called? BET?
Yes, one of the most corrupt members of Congress.
Right, and then you have, I guess, one of the new generation Kennedys giving a speech to a party that his uncle wouldn't recognize or his great uncle wouldn't recognize.
Well, I mean, they must really be scraping the bottom of the barrel. I mean, Mr. Kennedy was a favorite of mine, and I worked in his campaign, but he has been gone now for 55 years. Most people alive today... they may have heard of Jack Kennedy, but that's the extent of it. But now a young Kennedy has been brought in to resurrect the party, and as you say, his great uncle would not be allowed anywhere near a presidential nomination in the Democratic Party today. He'd be called a racist.
This is the grandson of Bobby Kennedy. I think this is the grandson of Bobby Kennedy,
Yes.
Who apparently is a congressman there in Massachusetts.
Yes.
His father was also a congressman. But I just wanted to mention here and get your reaction, because I sent you this little message today about the Democrats, that I think that if they win, that they're going to blow up because they cannot govern. I mean, how can you govern with crazy people like this? But if they lose, I'm not sure they can stay together as a party. I mean, it's just flaky. If they lose in November, by losing, I mean they don't pick up anything. I don't know how they stay together, Bill.
I think that's true whether they win or lose. I think even if they won, that they are so nuts that a lot of people are going to start dropping away. I could be very wrong, and they could be very dishonest and simply lie about what it is they stand for. But they really do not have anybody in 2020 to run who could pass muster in a psychiatrist's office. I mean, they've got Elizabeth Warren, who I think there was a statement made today, was it by the Navajo tribe or one of the other tribes? I don't want to get this wrong. But said that she has got to apologize for what she's done, and that is to claim all these years that she is a Native American. And she benefited
right.
from that self-designation because she got jobs from it. Now,
right.
either she is going to have to apologize, or she's going to have to double down and say, I mean, I know I came from a family and that we talked about this and we talked about our history. And yet there doesn't seem
right.
to be anything that this family ever left behind of this history. I mean, I don't think she's ever been asked to recite anything of Native American culture, but it's perfectly and also the name Elizabeth Warren doesn't strike me as being one that was here when the Pilgrims landed, you know?
So
she's in trouble. Then we have Kamala Harris, who is from California, and she is from a state that is probably right now the most left-wing state in the country. Their congressional
mm-hmm.
delegation, I mean, would elect Joe Stalin. Now, and she is thinking of running. And our senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, who really is an embarrassment to the Senate. She really is. I mean, there's nothing there. So, and they really don't have anybody. And Bernie Sanders is thinking of running again. And he might get the nomination. I mean, he will be
right.
older than the country at that point. and he will talk about his conversations with Thomas Jefferson. And so I talked to him about slavery, and he wouldn't listen to me.
That's right.
But they are they really are in terrible shape.
They really are. They have nowhere to go. They have nowhere to go. There's nothing. It'd be great if Joe Manchin decided to run for president to save the party, but he wouldn't be nominated.
They wouldn't let him in the hall.
They wouldn't let him in the hole yet. I mean, he would be—he'd be thrown out of the party. It'd be worse than what happened with Lieberman in 2000.
Oh,
in 2006.
That was an obscenity.
Oh yes, I mean Lieberman was the most serious guy they had, and they threw him out over the Iraq War. Well, looking at next week, Bill, it just seems like a lot of these things are going to be going on. But I think there's going to be a big confrontation between you have the State of the Union, I know, on Tuesday, and that always brings a lot of news. But it seems like some of these Democrats are going to be taking Dreamers to the State of the Union, which I hope President Trump will turn around and say to the Dreamers, hey, I'm willing to legalize all of you. Get these guys to help you. I think that would be brilliant if President Trump did that, Bill.
He will do something brilliant, which of course will immediately be denounced as a blunder by some of the TV commentators who really, I think, are probably getting a little shaky in their boots right now because Trump is on a roll and nothing seems to stop him. You know, the point was made. I forgot which commentator made this point. It was an important one, and again, I've forgotten the name. So, you know, you read all the stuff every day, you forget who says what. But a commentator was saying it is not surprising that the country did not react badly to news of Trump having an affair with an exotic dancer or that he used an obscenity. They said when we voted for him, we knew what we were getting. We knew he's an obscene guy. We know that he's a runaround. But the American people have accepted that, and they'll say just do the job, and we'll take care of the morality somewhere else. And then they went after Melania, and they couldn't understand why it didn't stick. They like her. It's a very strange time in American politics.
She's the first lady. I mean, why would you go after the first lady anyway? I mean, the first lady has always been out of bounds, I guess, in politics, at least with me. I mean, I've never felt that it's fair to criticize the First Lady. You may not like the guy, but my gosh, you know, leave the First Lady alone. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. And I have a funny feeling that next week is going to be another exciting week in the week of Trump.
I think so, too. And I think we're in for a tremendously exciting year in politics and also in international politics. Because
yes.
I think he's gone overseas several times and he's had several triumphs. And that's going to start to build up.
I agree. And do you want to make a bet? I'll bet you a cup of coffee that Nancy Pelosi says something very stupid, Bill.
Well, I think we both agree, so we can't bet.
That's right. We can't bet because we both agree on it. Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, as always, Bill, thank you for your time, and you do a great job at Urgent Agenda. We enjoy
thank
it
you.
A great deal, and I know a lot of your subscribers do as well. But great job as always, and always a lot of fun to chat with you.
Thank you, Silvio, and I look forward to next week.
Look forward to next week. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. I always chat with him on Sundays or just about every Sunday and just have a wonderful time. He's really a very nice person, very talented analyst, and his blog, Urgent Agenda, is one that I check quite often, and you should do the same. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.